Welcome back to the IL Indoor Off the Crossbar podcast here on ilindoor.com. I am your host, Teddy Jenner. Thanks for tuning in. And we are starting a new project here on the podcast. We're going to go around the league 9 weeks in a row, and we're going to talk to the 9 general managers of the National Lacrosse League. And we're going to start on the West Coast with the Washington Stealth. And joining us on the podcast this week is my good buddy, Doug Walker. Doug, how are you?
How are you, bud? Thanks for having me kick it off. I appreciate it.
Hey, there's a lot of pressure being first. You do realize that.
I know.
But you guys want to be first.
It can only get better from here, Teddy.
Exactly. And you guys want to be first, so it's probably a good thing to start with you. Let's just get into it. How long have you been a GM in the National Lacrosse League?
Well, I've been a GM for 4 seasons, starting with 2010, and was an assistant GM with the Stealth since they moved to San Jose, 2004. So this is year 10.
Year 10. And who sort of trained you? Was it the Johnny Meridian that you sort of worked under for the long time?
Yeah, absolutely. I started working with Johnny in 2004, and obviously was with him through the 2009 season, and then jumped into it full bore after that.
What do you like about being a general manager?
I like the daily interactions with a variety of people, players, coaches, other GMs. Every day is different. Mm-hmm. I love that. Some days are different in a good way, and some days are different in a bad way, but I love it. I actually kind of like being on the spot. You know, I mean, you have to react and hopefully make more good decisions than bad decisions, and it's a fun job because no day is like the day before.
What's been the best moment since you've been a general manager for you?
Well, I think there was 2. One, certainly, getting the move squared away from San Jose to Washington mm-hmm. was a pretty pivotal moment for the franchise and kind of ran the gamut of every emotion you could have leading up to it and not knowing what was going to go on. And, finally, June 14th that year, landing in Seattle for the first time and mm-hmm. saying, oh, my God, here we go. But that was a rush. I'd be hard pressed to come up with a better moment than winning a championship in 2010. I mean, that's hopefully not a once in a lifetime thing, but mm-hmm. winning it for the first time certainly is. And what a thrill, that was.
Speaking of championship winning teams, what's it take to build a championship team?
Well, I think you gotta have a lot of luck. Putting together the right pieces and having all those pieces coexist and get along off the room and then you got to stay injury free. You went through that season with us essentially. You saw the more highs than lows, but there was a lot of fortuitous bounces and, a lot of great play, but, your ball's got to bounce your way, in terms of winning at all. And I think you gotta stay with your principles in terms of the guys you believe in and the guys you think are going to get it done. And the more they feel that you're behind them, I think, the better they perform. And I think that's a huge part of it. So chemistry, the room, luck, and obviously a lot of hard work by a really talented coaching staff and a group of players. So.
How in touch with the coaching staff are you day-to-day, month-to-month, week-to-week kind of thing?
I would say certainly with CH, we talk probably, at least 2 times a day, sometimes more depending upon, what's going on and in the season. And sometimes it's just catching up, mm-hmm. kind of going over the previous day, what's been going on around the league or previous games. And then other times you're problem solving and that's when it gets into, multiple calls a day. And the way we kind of operate here is, I work directly with CH and, CH has his coaching staff that are his guys and that he's comfortable working with. And he communicates with them on a more regular basis than I do. Although, we're such a small staff that, I would say I talk to, Artie and Danny, probably a couple times a week, at least, leading up to the week. Just, again, might be catching up and it might be, talking about a specific issue.
And are you always looking for guys?
Yeah, you're always talking about guys, Teddy. I mean, you're watching the transactions and you're looking at your roster and you're, you know, especially this time of year, right, when you're when the trade deadline and essentially the roster freeze deadline is coming up in, you know, 2-3 weeks,
yeah.
You know, you're trying to make sure that your roster is in the best possible shape after the deadline, because what you have at that point is what you're going to ride the rest of the season out with. And you want to try to be as prepared as you can for almost any eventuality. And, you know, it kind of drives you crazy the weeks leading up to it. But
yeah.
You just try to put yourself in the best possible position.
In the National Lacrosse League, where it's very east-west centric, mm-hmm. is it hard for a Western GM to convince an Eastern guy to come out here? Because I know, you know, you look at the Stealth and what they've done over the past, you know, 2-3 years in trading guys who are Eastern-based guys back home, Kyle Hartzell, Paul Rabel, Luke Wiles. Is it getting harder and harder as guys become more family-oriented to keep an Eastern guy out West?
Sure. It's a reality of the league, you know, and until the league becomes a full-time league, and hopefully one day that will come sooner rather than later,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's other factors that, you know, impact guys' lives. And as they get older, start to get on with their careers, start families, you know, things start to happen and changes happen, and sometimes those changes necessitate moving guys closer to home. I can honestly tell you that I haven't had anyone say they have not wanted to play out West,
because
mm-hmm. At the end of the day, guys want to play.
Yeah.
But you're also, usually that's the younger guys and the guys who are just getting started in the league. And
yeah.
Our draft this year, for the most part, well, I think it had as many Eastern guys as Western guys.
Yeah.
And we were just frankly looking for what we thought were the best available guys, regardless of geography. To try to put the team together.
Marty O'Neill wrote a piece a few weeks ago talking about the relationship between families and general managers. And he was talking about how, you know, whenever he goes out east for scouting trips, he stays with the Cousins, Ryan Cousins' family. How is your relationship with the families of the players that you have? Do you find that's a big part of your job?
I would like to think that it's a really good relationship. I mean, we have... I love going east mm-hmm. and, you know, hanging out with the parents post game and just seeing how excited they are. And, you know, over the years, certainly with the Sorensons and the Grimes and the O'Dohertys and kind of the group we've been around for a long time, there's I think a really, really strong relationship. You know, and then out west, you know, we get to see those folks pretty much every home game. So
yeah.
it's always fun to see, you know, the Dutches or the, you know, now the Garrisons or whoever it might be
mm-hmm.
when they're in the rink. And then, you know, with our younger guys, with our draft guys, those relationships are just starting. And I think, you know, the way we do it here is we spend a lot of time talking to guys leading up to the draft. And, you know, so enhancing those relationships and getting to spend time with those families, you know, of our newer guys was a real treat in Rochester specifically when we were back there.
What do you look for when you're drafting a kid? Do you try to get the best player available or the best player for your team?
Depends on where you are in the draft. I think, you know, it's been a while since we've had a first round pick, but
mm-hmm.
I first round picks, to me, you're going with the best available guys. Certainly in the upper half of the draft. And then I think where we've been drafting, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, a lot of second round, third round picks, definitely looking for the best fit for our team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the good news, you know, has been for us that because the drafts have been so deep and because there's 9 teams, that there's some great talent sitting around in the second and third rounds. And, you know, I think it's evidenced by, you know, the group of guys that we've got, you know, right now. I think of all of our draft picks, you know, this past year, you know, we had one player who didn't make the team, and the other guys are all playing. So we spend a lot of time, our coaching staff and our scouts. Mark Baldini does a great job in the East, and spent a lot of time really trying to identify not only the good players, but kind of the stable personalities, the
mm-hmm.
guys with a little bit of hunger, the guys with a little bit of grit, and you know, I think we came away with a pretty solid group this year.
The guys at IslandIndoor.com, we're talking about what it takes to be a leader and to be a grinder in the National Lacrosse League. And the one person that really came to everyone's mind was a guy like Andrew Suter, who is unfortunately out with a really bad knee injury and he's going to miss the rest of the season. But that type of player isn't something you see far too often in this league. Are those grinder, two-way type guys, are they more diamonds in the rough, or are they guys that you can mold?
I think they're born with that. Like, I don't think, like, I think Andrew Suter, as an example, was that's his persona. You know, he's probably been that way for, you know, since he was a little guy. You know, I think of a guy, too, like Kyle Sorensen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Kyle Sorensen is a throwback, old-school mentality guy when he steps on the floor. And, you know, Grimer is similar to that in terms of the way he approaches it. And, you know, some of the younger guys, I think, have that same attitude that, you know, is developing, a Mitch McMichael or a Billy Hostrouser. You can kind of see it in those guys as well.
Yeah.
And I think they're born with it. And it's just hard work, blue collar, you know, that's what they do, you know, and one-on-one, they're going to do whatever they can to beat you, no matter whether you're a friend or whether you're an enemy. It's the same thing.
Let's talk about the Stealth franchise in general. Yeah. For people that may not know, you guys go all the way back to Albany, New York, and for some reason, it's just been following you guys everywhere you go, just unable to find... You've had secure homes, but you haven't been able to find that really deep, passionate, full crowd fan base. What's it going to take, do you think, for the people who aren't coming to games in Everett and Seattle and the Pacific Northwest to finally buy in to the Washington Stealth?
Well, you hope that over time they buy in, and you know, we have enough touch points in the community that, you know, it gets them to that first game, and then when they get to that first game, they're just hooked. And it's been, you know, obviously a challenge. We've been in, you know, since I've been with the franchise, we've been in two non-traditional lacrosse markets.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, San Jose, California, and Everett, Washington. You know, not two cities not on the tip of people's tongues when they talk about lacrosse. So, you know, that presents some special challenges in itself, and I think we have to be much more visible, continue to be out in the community, continue to try to do good things, you know, so that people respect what we're doing and know that we're trying to grow the game, and then in turn support us so that we can do the things, you know, that we want to do in the future. We've been blessed over that time by great ownership, you know, who, you know, I believe are in it for, you know, all the right reasons, in terms of growth of the game and community outreach and all those kinds of things. And, you know, Denise Watkins, you know, deserves a lacrosse gold medal, if there were one, in terms of, you know, being a champion for the sport and doing it for the right reasons while taking, you know, significant personal loss herself. You know, she realizes, I think, that it's a marathon rather than a sprint. But, you know, you keep hoping by having success that people are going to start coming. And, you know, that's obviously the hope. And I'm not disillusioned by that thought. I just, you know, you kind of wish it would happen sooner rather than later.
For people that don't know, you guys were on the verge of not being in the National Lacrosse League this year. A late 11th hour deal was signed where you guys were able to get another deal with Comcast. How close was it?
It honestly, I don't think was that close. The Watkins family wanted to continue. Obviously the financials were, we needed to get a solid deal at Comcast that would allow us to plan for the future and plan for the growth. So I didn't feel like the franchise was at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly when we were in San Jose, you know, at the end of the 2009 season, that was an at-risk situation.
Yeah.
You know, this was a much different situation, although whenever your lease is up in any rink,
yeah,
and you're coming off a disastrous season, you know, on the floor, you wonder about that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And but I never really felt like we were we were on the brink. And intuitively, you know, no one is going to, under their own volition, go out that way.
No.
So the competitive nature, you know, you want another crack at it, and you want to show that you have a good product. And, you know, last season was on pretty much every level, a forgettable year. And fortunately, we're off to a better start this year, and, you know, things have turned around, and just the mentality of the guys is so different this year. It's been great to see, and they deserve it. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys that have been with us through thick and thin, you know, for all these years, are holding their head up high again, which is great to see.
You are obviously very much in the pulse with the National Lacrosse League throughout the other GMs. What's the word around the league about the stability of the Washington franchise?
Well, I honestly can't answer that, Ted. I don't know what truly goes on in people's heads.
Yeah.
I know that it's nine very committed owners, mm-hmm. who are all supportive of each other. We have very frank conversations about each other's businesses and where the opportunities and where the risks are. And I would say over the last 2 years specifically, you know, there's been a great collaborative effort, you know, in those Board of Governors meetings with everybody trying to help each other. And, you know, that has been a tremendous help, not only for us at times, but, you know, certainly other franchises that, you know, struggle at times to do the things that they want to do, you know, based on whatever their business model is. And I think what draws a lot of attention to us, you know, and it has for, you know, 10 years, frankly, mm-hmm. is, you know, but certainly in the last 4 years, is that Denise and Dave Takata are, they're going to announce the number that's there.
Yeah.
You know, if there's 3,100 people in the building, they're going to announce 3,100 people.
Yeah.
And that's just the way they do business, and it's an ethical approach. And frankly, you know, the feeling internally is, you know, we're comfortable with the numbers we're announcing. We know what our business model is. We know what our budget is. You know, if we're not worried about it and pushing panic buttons,
yeah.
you know, get on to a different topic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's we could do what some franchises have done in the past, and you have 3,100 people in the building, you announce 5,100. Well,
yeah.
how does that help anybody?
Yeah. When it's a 8,000 seat arena, the difference between 3,100 and 5,100 is a lot of people.
Well, yeah.
Whereas compared to,
I've been in other events in our building in specific, and you know what's in the building.
Yeah.
And you see what's announced, and you kind of chuckle to yourself, but people believe it.
Yeah.
It makes them feel better, you know. And I guess my message is, you know, I mean, yeah, we'd like to have 8,000 people every night, don't get me wrong, but I mean, if we're operating as a franchise, and we have been for, you know, X number of years, you know, announcing those numbers because those are the real numbers, you know, let us deal with the business aspects, and let's talk about lacrosse. You know, I mean, I think the Watkins have shown, you know, their commitment to the sport and their, you know, their desire to keep things going.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, they're the ones that are going to decide, you know, not a group of people or an individual on a message board.
Yeah.
You know, so it actually works counterproductive to helping us grow.
Yeah.
In the community, and really the focus for us is on the product that we put out there. And, you know, we feel if we put a winning product out there over time, people are going to come. If we're
right.
If we've got our guys coaching high school or youth programs and doing the right thing at community events and winning lacrosse games, you know, with a classy group of guys, that people are going to recognize that and they're going to come.
Do you think, obviously, one of the hot button discussions is bringing a National Lacrosse League team back to Vancouver?
Yeah.
Do you think that would help the Washington Stealth? Or hurt them?
You know what, Ted? I think any time you can create rivalries within your region, yeah, it's a plus.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the greatest scenario I've always thought for us would have been, you know, how great would it have been if there was a team, if the Ravens were in Vancouver, we were in Everett, and Portland was in Portland.
Yeah.
I mean, what a tremendous.
Yeah. Well, you just look at the success that rivalry's had in the MLS with Portland, the Portland Timbers,
right.
Seattle Sounders, and the Vancouver Whitecaps. It's huge.
Oh my God, we see it almost every week. It seems like in the WHL, you know, with you know, the Giants, who are obviously having a tough year, but I mean, with Seattle and Everett battling it out, you know, it seems like every other week, and you know, those are fantastic rivalry games.
Yeah.
And so from that standpoint, sure it would, because you know, I certainly see people driving up and down, you know, I-5 trying to get to games and planning nights around those games and you know, just the excitement that would build. So, you know, I definitely do think that it would help. I can honestly see absolutely, I can't see anything, you know, negative about it.
Yeah.
Frankly.
One last question for you.
How
do you, when you sit back, take off your GM shoes, and you look at the entire National Lacrosse League, how would you rate the state of the game?
Well, I love the product. You know, I think the changes that went in with the rules a couple of years ago have made it a very different game than it was, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's faster. It's there's so much transition. There's so much action. You know, the skill level is just so incredibly high. That I think the game itself is—I don't think the game has been in a better place since I've been involved.
Yeah.
You know, you've got these younger athletes that are, you know, fast and strong and just ridiculously skilled. You know, pushing out, you know, kind of the stable names that we've all been used to talking about all these years.
Yeah.
And you know, they're stepping into lineups all over the league, and you know, making a name for themselves, and that's pretty exciting. I think the next step for the league to grow, to keep pace with that is, and we were actually having a conversation about it the other day, is, you know, the young goaltenders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of them.
No.
You know, that are on the, and it's kind of like every team, it's a 9-team league, every team has their starting, you know, marquee goaltender.
Yeah.
And then probably every GM, you know, if you put true serum in him, would tell you, you know, if that guy goes down, uh-oh.
Right.
You know, it's kind of one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe it's paranoia. Maybe as GMs, we're just way too paranoid about, you know, the younger goaltenders in the league. But I you'd like to see that develop really quickly. And I actually kind of expect Marty to come up with some kind of article, you know, sometime soon about the development of young goaltenders, because it's probably the only thing that hasn't kept pace, frankly.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about it, but
there are some
really good young goaltenders.
Of course.
Don't get me wrong.
But it takes goaltenders a few years before they become elite goaltenders. It's very rare that a goaltender steps in the NLL right away and has an impact. I can think of guys like Matt Vince and Tyler Richards, the two most recent guys that I've seen been able to do that. But you look at Aaron Bold, Mike Poulin, Nick Rose, those guys all had to sit behind great legendary goaltenders before they got their shot. And now we're seeing Colorado, who is now going to have to run the rest of the year with two unproven rookie goaltenders.
Yeah.
And it's going to be an interesting scenario to see how that you know, affects them moving forward.
Yeah, and my sense is I think those guys will rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And we saw it a year ago in Minnesota with Carlson and Kirk.
Right.
You know, they both were in that same boat, young unproven goaltenders, and you know, I think really did a fantastic job for the Swarm. And I think we're going to see that in Colorado, and maybe that's the wave. Maybe that's what you got to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just
throw them in the fire.
You just got to do it.
Yeah.
So,
Doug, I appreciate you taking the time. This has been a fantastic chat. I know you're doing an excellent job down there in Everett, and you're always constantly busy and looking for the next big thing. And good luck to the Minnesota Swarm this weekend. And I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Teddy. Take care.
There he is, Doug Locker, general manager of the Washington Stealth. He's been at it for quite a long time, and he knows the tricks of the trade. And he does a really good job. He's made some blockbuster deals. He's made some great draft picks when he's been able to. As you mentioned, he hasn't had a first-round draft pick in a while, so he's had to deal with what he's got. But the Washington Stealth are in a position to once again make a deep run into the playoffs. I want to thank Doug for joining us this week on the Off the Crossbar podcast. I want to thank you for listening. Next week, we'll have another National Lacrosse League GM. Who will it be? I don't even know. It's all next week right here on Off the Crossbar, courtesy of IOIndoor.com and Inside Lacrosse. And remember, be excellent to each other.